All right, we're beginning here on the top of Kuflam and Gimel Madalab, 7 lines down. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Chutin Shebelechi, the veins that are in the lechi, the jaw, well, obviously speaking about here is not the jaw, but the tongue itself. Asurin, they're problematic, I mean in terms of dam. If the Kohen who you're giving the lechi to doesn't know how to remove them, Einot Lim Lo Matana. You can't give him the matnot kihuna because he's not going to deal with them properly. Viloli, and that's not true. Because even Tavio, if he's going to roast the tongue, then midov daiv, the blood will run out. This is the way that we deal with the liver. We deal with parts of the animal that weren't salted properly, that we roast them on the open fire, and that draws the blood out and then burns it off so it doesn't get reabsorbed. So that's a measure to deal with items that have blood in them that need to be removed. And so do over here. Those veins that have that extra blood that's inside of the tongue, you're not going to have to pull them out because you can just roast them and it'll draw the blood out. Hilik deira, if it's cooked up in a pot, if he already sliced it and then salted it, then midav daive, then the blood's going to get drained out or pulled out because he cut it, and the cutting is going to open up the veins to the possibility of the salting. So we don't have to worry about this, even though technically it should be taken out. The proper way to deal with it is to take it out. And we don't want to give it to Kohen who's not going to want to do that or doesn't know how to do that. Nevertheless, even if it ends up in his hands, the solutions are the normal way that you would deal with tongue anyway. And so for that reason, it makes it less of an issue because we assume that either way that he's going to cook the dung, it's going to result in a proper removal of the dam that's in there. And just as an aside, today we still do take out those veins, and we don't rely on this that it's going to be roasted or cut up, because people might cook the tongue whole rather than cutting it up. If they do that, then you have the problem. Number two is the salting is done beforehand, not when the person gets it. So even if they cut it, the salting was done previously. They're not going to salt it again when they get it and cut it open. For that reason, they take out the veins beforehand. Amar Rava, you can see in the Ot Aleph in the Bach that he says that it's Amar Rabba and not Amar Rava, although that doesn't make so much sense because of the next line in the Gemara, which is Badaklan Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was testing us, meaning the Talmidim. Rava is a Talmid of Rav Yosef. Rabba is a peer of Rav Yosef. And therefore, it wouldn't make so much sense that Rabba was saying, Rav Yosef tested us. So, more likely, Girsa should be Rabba. Badaklan Rav Yosef, Hai Kahana, Dechotif, Madnato, Chavuve, Kabechave, Mitzvah, O Zulzule, Kam Zalzal, B'mitzvah. You go and snatch the Matanot, Kehuna, from the owners. Is that a demonstration of the Chibuva Mitzvah? How much the mitzvah is beloved to you so that you don't want to even leave it for a minute, you go and grab them? Or is that a zilzul, that you're going in there and grabbing it instead of allowing the balim to give the matanot? Does it look like you're maybe a gargaron, gluttonous in nature, or is it going to be perceived negatively, that you just want the food, that you're after these things? Which way is it perceived when you go in and grab it instead of allowing the balim to give it? Upashtanalei. And I said to him, Vinatan. The Pasuk says, with regards to the matnot over here, that the Mishpat HaKonim, Me'eta Am, Me'et Zobche Zevach, Imshorim Zev, Vinatan LaKohen, Hazroa VeLachayim VeHakeva, Vinatan VeLo Shito Me'atzmo. The Balim should give it, and you shouldn't be taking it. It's a big problem if you read Josephus towards the end of Bayit Sheni, that the Kohanim are running around and basically demanding all their matanot, their truma, they're confiscating it from people. They're not having people give it. They're rather going in there and almost like a tax collector and removing it or taking it without even consideration of the party that has it and is going to give it. And so the behavior here would also be something that is a zilzul because it's a failure in vinatan. The other reason why the question might be relevant over here is because, as Rashi over here notes, Rava Kohen Haya. Rava was a Kohen, and therefore it makes more sense that Rav Yosef is asking this question to Rava because he's a Kohen, rather than to Rabba, who was not a Kohen. And if you look in the Tosafot, he says, Rova Garsinan, the Rabba Kohen Havo. Because Rabba was a Kohen. And the Bach changes the Girsin Rashi to Rabba. It has to do with the Machloket in the Girsa and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah with regards to Abaye. And either Rova or Rabba were both Kohanim. Over there, the Gemara just talks about that they were both Bnei Eli. They were from the descendants of Eli who didn't live a long life. They lived very short lives. And over there it says that Abaye lived 20 years longer than Rova or Rabba because not only were they Lomdei Torah, they were also Gomlei Chasadim. And the Gemilat Chesed gave them an additional 20 years of life, even though they both did not live a very long life. But the same Girsa problem that you have here is also mentioned there with regards to whether it's Rava or Rabba that is the Kohen. Now, Rashi over here has an interesting view as to what Chatifna is. He says, Mitinokot Shnosim Otam LeKohanim. You should grab them away from the youngsters carrying them to the Kohanim. So that gives the Achronim a field day as to why he set up the case in that way. Likely because of the problem that is posed by Abaye's practice, which is that we know that Tovat Hana'ah belongs to the Baalim. The Baalim have a right to choose which Kohen that they're giving it to. If you grab it, you're taking away that Tovat Hana'ah from the Baalim. That means that not only is there a Derech Eretz problem or a mitzvah problem, there's a separate issue of Gneva, if you at least think Tovat Hana'ah is Mamon. If you think Tovat Hana'ah is not Mamon, okay, so it's not real Gneva or Gzela, but it's still knocking out their ability to have that option for Tovat Hana'ah. It's likely that Rashi, it writes that they took it from the Yiladim, because either at that point, the Nitina is no longer relevant, because you gave it to a Katan, and a Katan is not a Bar Nitina, so maybe that's why, or the more likely answer, and probably makes more sense, is that the parent was sending it to a particular Kohen. And in that way, they were already Mekayim the issue of Nitina. It was just that they were being chotefet before it got there. They didn't wait for it to arrive at their house. It was on the way to them, and they were chotefet on the way. They grabbed it on the way there from the messenger bringing it. So they didn't change the destination of the matanot. That was already decided. That's already on their way to their house. They did give it, but they were just grabbing it before it reached them, which also would be a more of a siman of a excitement about it in the mitzvah, because part of the problem that we have in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel with the Bnei Eli is exactly this issue, that they run and they take the matnot that belonged to the Kohanim before they were entitled to it. They didn't wait for it to be cooked. They didn't wait for the people to give it to them. They went and stuck their forks right into the pot and took out whatever they wanted from there. And that's part of the problem, is that they were acting in a manner that was both mechutzif, but also mezalzel in other people, and in the matnot kunan degraded the whole standing of the Kohanim and the Mishkan. And so you would assume that the same thing is true here, but if you say it's already on the way to them, and they're just catching it on the way, so that is more of an indication of a chavivat mitzvah rather than a behavior that you would think lacks derech eretz. Because here you're just running out to greet the mitzvah that's coming to you. So that's an ideal of the chatifa. And what Rova's chiddush was when he responded to Rav Yosef, obviously Rav Yosef was testing him, and Rav Yosef agreed with this, which is that Minatan means you wait for it to come to you. There's no obligation. There's no even hidur mitzvah for you to go out and take it. The mitzvah is to come to you, and therefore you can remain passive in this. It's not an issue of chavivat the mitzvah, it's still zilzul the mitzvah, and therefore you should wait for it. Amar Abaye, Meresh, hava chatifna matanata. In the beginning I used to go and grab the matanot. Amino, I said to myself, chavuve kame chavivna mitzvah. It's because I love the mitzvah, I want to grab the mitzvah, and I do want to do it right away. Came on the shmana daha, after I heard what Rav Yosef, Abaye is also a talmid of Rav Yosef, after I heard that, benatan veloshi told me atzmo, that it's better to wait for the person to give it than to take it with yourself. Michtaf lo chatifna. After that point in time, I didn't grab it anymore. I didn't take it anymore. So then he says, I stopped the practice of grabbing it, which is to Abaye's credit, which is that even though he didn't know or wasn't aware of this, as soon as he became aware of it, he changed his practice. He changed his behavior, which is very complimentary to him. Meimar amrei havuli. But then I still had the practice of telling them, give it to me. He stopped grabbing it, but he still was asking for it, or saying, come on, let's bring it over here. V'kevan d'shmana l'ha. But after I heard this, which is another member, the Tanya, we have a brayta with regards to the sons of Shmuel. It says, v'yitu acharei avatza, that they were swayed after the corruption, after the bribery. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Shmuel, chalkam shalu b'fiyem. The interpretation of that is clearly not that Shmuel's sons were corrupt. The whole reason Shmuel displaces Eli HaKohen and the Mishkan is destroyed is corruption. Shmuel's whole party line was anti-corruption. The fact that his sons would be corrupt is very difficult and almost an undermining of Shmuel's old attempts, which is why obviously the Navi mentions it. But for that reason, Chazal are unwilling to see it as being literally that they were corrupt. So there has to be something that was borderline, which means that it was a behavior that wasn't perceived properly, but not that it was actually a real issue of Betzah, of that type of corruption. Rabbi Meir Omer, B'nei Shmuel Chalkam Shalu B'fiyem. They were Levi'im, and they used to ask for their Maaser Rishon directly. They wouldn't wait for it to be given to them. They went and demanded it or asked for it. Now, again, technically, there's no issue with it, which is that you're not forcing the person to do it. You're not taking it unjustly. But the fact that you're demanding it or putting pressure on the individual, already that is something that has the improper appearances, might even lead to decisions that they wouldn't have made and give it to you. So you're in some ways forcing the issue, which we would prefer that you don't do that, or it does degrade, again, the standing of the Kohanim and the Levi'im in doing such. It should be that the Israelim are doing this voluntarily to give to them, not that they're coming and demanding it to be given. So now Gemara says, Mei mar nami lo amina. Then, once I had heard that, I changed my practice as well, and I didn't ask for it anymore. Once again, compliment to Abaye, that as soon as he learned this, he changed his practice. Vi avuli shakilna. When they give it to me, I take it. Kevin dishman alaha. After I heard this next memra, so over there, he's moving from grabbing it to asking for it. Now he's down to just waiting for it. And now he has the final memra, which is the Tanya. Hatsnuim moshchim et yudehem ve'agargarnim chokim. Those that were tsanua used to pull away, and those that were more gluttonous used to divide it up. So now, this is based on a Gemara in Yoma. It's a very complex Gemara that we won't spend a lot of time on now. It's worthwhile to look it up in Yoma and to see what's going on there. But it's after the time of Shimon HaTzadik, who had many miracles that took place during his time period. After his death, many of the special signs or miracles in the Mikdash subside. And one of those things is that bracha mitzuya bapat. There was a bracha in the matanot kuhuna, the korbanot that were in the Mikdash. So that even if you got a very small portion, that portion was still satisfying. After his death, that wasn't the case. And therefore, when you got it, it wasn't so satisfying. So for that reason, the gargarnim used to grab because they wanted more so that they would get more and be more satisfied. And the tsnuim used to walk away. Now they're called tsnuim over here because they did it in a quiet manner. They didn't make a big stink about it. They didn't make it a public issue. They kind of just stepped away or made it look like they were taking but didn't actually take it. The major issue here is twofold. One of which is there a mitzvah for a kohen to eat the korbanot? Is that a class mitzvah or an individual mitzvah? This gemara or this braita is very influential in that point, because if they can walk away from it, it means that they can forfeit the mitzvah of eating kodoshim and leave it to the class of kohanim to eat it. That would be proof in one direction. The other issue might be the size of the portion. If it's a substandard size, then maybe even there's no mitzvah, and that's why they could walk away from it. And that's a machlok of Yishonim over there as to what the size of the portion was. Did it meet the threshold size of a minimum shiur that would have been considered achila for the Kohen? Or was the whole problem it was below standard size? So if it's below standard size, that could explain the whole thing, and then you don't learn as much from it. If it's above standard size and they still walked away from it, that would teach you much more. But given both of those, the question is, what was the status, or what were they getting before Shimon HaTzadik passed away? And what were they getting afterwards, size-wise? And then what was the impact? But the basic idea is that the Tsnuim pulled away. When there are people grabbing for it, people vying for it, then they don't go in and take. They're willing to walk away. And therefore, Rabbi comes to the conclusion, Mishkal Nami Lo Shokilna. I don't even take it anymore. Meaning that part of being at Tsanua is not to expect the Matnot Kuna, not to receive the Matnot Kuna, to demur and say that it's okay, I have what I need. Again, the practice in Yoma seems to be a practice that's deriving out of the problem of the fact that the bracha is not mitzuya in the lechem apanim anymore. But over here, it doesn't seem to be that that's a result of a problem, and Abaye reads it as much more simply that if you're tsanua, then sonei matanot yichya, someone who doesn't accept gifts, that's a good policy, and so this is a type of gift, and I should have that same policy. What's interesting about Abaye is that we know that Abaye was tremendously poor. He both was impoverished, and then also did not have parents. He was orphaned at a very young age. So he doesn't necessarily have a mesorah from a parent because he grew up as an orphan. And he also is impoverished. And that might explain his behavior here as to why he was going and grabbing the matnot kuna, because that was really his means of sustenance. And he didn't have a mesorah from a father because he was orphaned. And therefore he acted in this way. But then that makes only more amazing his behavior over here, which is the fact that he was willing to walk away from it when he found out the halacha or the proper behavior was not to take it and not to grab it. He was still willing to do such. And so that only speaks more highly or complimentary towards Abaye's reaction to these pointers that he's getting along the way, which made him change his behavior. So then Abaye says that after that point, Mishkal Nami Lo Shakilna, I didn't take it anymore. The bar, Mimala Yome Ter Kipuri. Exception of Erev Yom Kippur, because lachzuke nafshai bekane, in order to put out my shingle and say that I am a Kohen. If I never act like a Kohen, nobody's going to know that I'm a Kohen, and then for Yichus and all these other things, nobody's going to be aware of the fact that I'm a Kohen. So once a year, on Erev Yom Kippurim, then I put out my shingle and said I'm a Kohen, and I accepted these matanot. Because it was a Yom Tov, given that it was a Yom Tov, there were matanot mirubot, as the Bali Tosfot say, the kohanim mitasfim, and all the kohanim are there. Vilulei nutela yomrim sheinu kohen. So all the kohanim are coming because there's such plentiful gifts to be given. If he steps out on that time, it doesn't show up, they're going to assume that he's just not a kohen, and that's why he's not showing up. So he had to put in his shingle once a year to show I am a kohen, so that the other times when he demurred, it was because he didn't want to take it rather than his not being a kohen. So the Gemara says, "Vilifros yadei," very easy, just duchen, and then everybody will know that you're a Kohen. Why do you need to have taken from the matnot in order to indicate you're a Kohen? Just get up and do nisiat kapayim, and then everybody will know you're a Kohen. Ansele idne, he had a time problem. The moment didn't give itself to him to allow for such a thing to happen. The way Rashi writes it, this is itim shekava l'tamidav. He had times where he was teaching. They used to bog him down to the point where he couldn't get out to do nisiyat kapayim. When the minyan was getting together, he was dealing with his talmidim. He was teaching Torah birabim. That would indicate that he has a tour because he's osek b'talmud Torah from doing a mitzvah aseh, which is true that in general, when you have a din in Talmud Torah where it can be done a yidei acherim, you might have a tour from the mitzvah to say. So that's why he opted out of doing nisiyat kapayim in order to take care of his talmidim in order to teach Torah. It's a pretty interesting dynamic that he would do that and that he'd be willing to do that. The riff you can see over here says that he was chole me'ayim. He had a stomach ailment, and the stomach ailment prevented him from getting up there and duchening, which, again, would be in line with what I said before, that Abaye was extremely poor, and that he probably had issues with his stomach because of what he ate, or what he could eat, or what he had to eat. That would make sense. The only thing is that the fact that he was chole me'ayim, that means his whole life he wasn't able to get up and duchen, seems a little stretched. Although you could just argue that it didn't matter that it wasn't for his whole life, even if it was for durations that were extended, that would already stop people from knowing that he was a Kohen because he didn't go up all the time. And he wanted at least once a year just to make sure that he had his shingle out there that he was a Kohen. Amar Rav Yosef, Hai Kahana, De'itlei Tzubra Mirabonan B'Shibibutei, the Goein who has a young whippersnapper, Talmud Chacham, in his neighborhood, De'chikalei Milta, and he's having a hard time making ends meet, he's impoverished, he's learning Torah, he can barely make a living, L'zikelei Matnato. So then he should give him the Matanot. And the Kohen should accept him and then give them over to this Talmud Chacham. Va'af al-gav delo'at the yadei. Even if the matanot don't ever come into the hands of the Kohen, he can direct them to this Talmud Chacham. V'makirei kuna b'leviyah. The concept that's used today as well. It's the idea that if you have a Kohen who is your primary Kohen, or you have a Levi who's your primary Levi, who you always give your matanot to, then that Kohen and Levi can assume that those matanot are coming to them. Or, more importantly, we assume that they already have a kinyan in them to the point where if someone else takes them, it's problematic, and that they have enough right to direct them to this Talmud Chacham. It never came to the hands of the Kohen. He never made a kinyan on it. Doesn't he need to make a kinyan on the matanot in order to grant it to someone else? He's directing the Balim to give it directly to this Talmud Chacham. The reason is the Balim normally gave it to this Kohen, and so therefore, by definition, as soon as these Matanot appear, there's an if already acquired by that Kohen, and given that, he can then pass them on to the Talmud Chacham because they're already in his possession. So this is a mechanism that you can use today, or that some use today, in order to deal with Trumot and Masrot if they're taking off from their items. If they have Makirei Kuna and Leviyah, those individuals can be mochel. You can give them money instead. You can work out deals with them because they're the ones who are assumed to automatically have taken possession of your Trumot and Masrot, and therefore they can dictate what happens to them, even though it never reached their hands. So it helps out again today in dealing with some issues of Trumot and Masrot. Rova v'Rav Safra iklu lebei Mar Yochana b'Reid Rav Chana ba'ado. So Rava and Rav Safra went to the house of Mar Yochana, the son of Rav Chana ba'ado. Ramila the Bay Mar Yochana b'Reid Rav Chana bar Bizna. Question of which Mar Yochana it was. Was that the son of Rav Chana ba'ado or Rav Chana bar Bizna? Over here it's interesting that it's Rava that's going, which would seem to indicate that Rava is not a Kohen based on the story. And again, it would go against what Rashi said before, that Rava is a Kohen, and would favor heavily the Girsa that says Rava is a Kohen and not Rava. It seems to be a more correct version of that Gemara with regards to the descendants of Eli, that it's Abaye and Rava and not Abaye and Rava. Ovid lahu igla tilta. He made for them the finest meal. He made for them an igla tilta, which Rashi over Shas gives different definitions to it. Either tilta can be, it grew a third of its maturity, or it's the third one that's born to the mother, which Rashi rejects in some places. And then it could be igla tilta, which just means the finest or the best of them. Amale Rava the Shame. Rava says to the Shamash, who is serving them, Zachilan Matnato. You should give us the matanot. The Be'ina Lamecha. I want to eat Lishna Bechardulo. I want to eat a pickled tongue, a tongue in mustard. So now, Rava, who's a non-Kohen, can't take the tongue. But he wants his pickled tongue, he wants his tongue in mustard. So how does he deal with it? The Shamash that's servicing in the meal is a Kohen. So he says to that Kohen, take possession of the item, and then give it to us. Because he as a Kohen has a right to take it. And Rav Yosef just said before that you can give it to a Talmud Chacham. He assumes that the Baal Habayit would give it to the Shamash, because he's a Kohen, and in all likelihood, he was the Makarei Kuna for the Baal HaBayit. He's saying to him, take the matanot, and prepare for me a pickled or mustard tongue. Zochelei Rava, so Rava took possession of it, meaning that he cooked it for him and gave it to him, and ochel, and he ate it. Rav Safra lo ochel. Rav Safra did not eat it. He refused to eat it. Arkuyu the Rav Safra b'chalmo. In a dream, they came to Rav Safra. Akuya comes from the word Kri. They read him a pasuk. In his dream, he sees the following pasuk from Mishle: Ma'adeh beged biyom kara chometz al nater v'shar b'shirim alevra. So these are all items that are basically ineffective or don't make sense. Which is ma'adeh beged the one who disrobes, or the residuals of the beged you wear tatters, the Yom Kara, on a chilly day, on a time when you need to be covered, you're either disrobing or wearing things that don't really cover you. Chometz al neter. If you put vinegar on the lime or a base, the chometz, which is an acid, you're putting it on a base, it's going to ruin the base. It's going to eat away at it rather than work together with it. Bishar bishirim, and one who sings songs to levra, to someone who is in bad spirits or doesn't meaningful to them because they're in a bad way. So he sees this dream about the pasuk as being a criticism of his behavior. Therefore, after the coming of Rav Yosef, Rav Safra goes before Rav Yosef, maybe because I violated your memra, Rav Yosef, that's why they read me this pasuk, which is the Shar Shirim Belev Ra. You're learning Torah. The memra of Rav Yosef didn't make any impact on you. You were the Lev Ra, and you didn't accept the learning that was there. Or you just sing song the learning of Torah, and it makes no impact on you that you don't act on it. Rav Yosef said that the Kohen is entitled to give it to the Talmud Chacham. So if he's entitled to give it to the Talmud Chacham, why can't he do it in this case? Amar Lei, Rav Yosef responds to him and says, Ki Amrei Ano, when I said that din, Bacher, that's with someone else. I mean, that means a third party, an independent Kohen, that's the case where the Kohen has a right to defer and give over the matnot to the Talmud Chacham. Shama Bal Korchei Mizake. When it comes to the Shamash, he's doing it against his will. He doesn't really have a choice. He's the Shamash, serving them in the meal. He knows the Baal HaBayit wants to please these guests. They're serving an egg, tilta, which is a very big, fine meal. He knows that he has a certain obligation towards these guests. So when the guest makes a request of him, you think he's going to turn him down? Of course not. So when he's taking it, or he's demanding that the Kohen give it to him, it's clear that he's almost forcing the Kohen into a position to give it up, and not that the Kohen's doing this of his own volition. And so that's why it's a failure, because the Kohen is just going to acquiesce, not because he really wants to, but because he wants to please the guests, and he wants to please the Baal HaBayit. And in addition to that, v'chi amrei, I know, when I said this, the mandalo efshele, that's someone who was dechikala milto, someone who had economic troubles, was on hard times, and he was having a hard time making ends meet. That's where I said that practice is good. Ha, Efshalei. But here, Rava clearly is not in need and has what he needs over here. And therefore, it doesn't make sense that he took it. So then, he says, Vela my time, Akar Yon Hochi. So then he said, then why did they read me this pasuk? Rav Safra is worried that they read him the pasuk and it's negative towards him. And Rav Yosef said to him, he didn't do anything wrong. He actually did the right thing here. My memra is not about these situations, and therefore you were not in violation of my memra. So then he says, then why did they read me the pasuk? Klavei Rova. They were telling you what Rova did was wrong. It says, well, I carry in the Rova. So why don't they give the dream to Rova? Why am I seeing what's going on with Rova? It says back to him, Rova Nazuf Hava. Rova was banned from receiving such messages, or basically he was banished from Davarim Shemik Dusha, communications from heaven, because Kalom is a low level of Nevuah, and Rava's behavior had precipitated his being almost excommunicated in a sense, and therefore he was no longer receiving this type of Nevuah. As to why Rava was Nasuf is Nishamati, Shumte Yitiach Klape Malo, because he acted in a haughty manner towards heaven, which is a story in the Gemara in Tanit, where the mother of Shava Malka asked for rain, and he basically goes when it wasn't necessary and demands that they bring rain. So they felt that that was something that he troubled Shamayim when it was unnecessary. Meaning that when you wield power like that, they expect you to use that power judiciously in a proper way, conservatively. If you wield that power and you wave it around like a big stick, then they're going to get upset that you're abusing that power that's granted to you. And that was the problem over here. Although Rashi then says he's not sure that he thinks that that was the issue. He says that he thinks that he was put into timeout because of this incident, because he acted inappropriately over here. And therefore, they didn't come to him because he lost his standing by acting inappropriately. That's the reason behind it. Now again, Rashi over here, the Shita Tov before says, Rova was a coin, so he didn't need to do that. The Kaimalon, the Bibnei Eli, Ato, So now, again, Rashi is saying that the Girsa in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah should be Rova. And the Gilin HaShas Rabbi Kiva Eger points out, Ayin Rashi Sham, Shekatabe Hipuch Mikan. Go check out Rashi over there, says just the opposite of over here. And again, the Baal Tosfot would say that the Girsa over there should be Rabba was a Kohen. And therefore it was Rova who was a non-Kohen. But Rashi explains then, why didn't he want to take it if he was a Kohen? Miuminavshe lo matzi shakol dechtiv natan v'lo shito matzmo. He couldn't take the matanot without having permission from the Baalim, because the Baalim have to give it and not you take it. So he couldn't do that. But he figured out, so what he assumed was that the Shamash was a Makri Kohen for the Balabayit, and therefore he was entitled to it and he have it, and he relied on Rav Yosef for that. But for Rava himself, he couldn't rely on that because he wasn't the Makri Kohen for the Balabayit. So even though he's a Kohen, he had the Shamash take it and then give it to him. That is the way Rashi explains it here, based on the fact that Rava was a Kohen. Again, Rashi and Rosh Hashanah and Tosfot over here say that it was Rava in particular and not Rabbah, because he wasn't a Kohen, and that's why he had to ask the Shamash for this help. Amar Alei Abayi L'Rav Dimi, Upashte Dekra V'Maiktiv. That Pasuk that they told Rav Safra in the dream, what is the Pashut Pshat of that Pasuk? Amar Alei B'Shoneh L'Talmid Sheinu Hagun. When you teach a student that is inappropriate or not worthy, that's what the Pasuk's talking about, that you're Shar Shirim V'Lev Ra. You're singing songs to a person who is a bad heart. I mean, that this is someone who's not appropriate, not fitting for the teaching, and you're singing songs. You're teaching him Torah, the Shir of Torah. Someone who teaches a student who is not worthy, is inappropriate, ends up in Gehinom. The simple way to read this would be that the teacher falls in Gehinom, which would be because he's teaching someone who is not worthy, he is then held accountable and is Nofel B'Gehinom. In the Gemara in Sanhedrin, there are Rishonim who say that Nofel B'Gehinom is the student, which is that when you teach someone who's not appropriate, they're going to end up abusing, misunderstanding, not using the Torah in the proper way, which will cause them to be Nofel B'Gehinom, and then you'll be responsible for that Nofel B'Gehinom, because you're precipitating, you are causing the problem. Shinamar, because the Pasuk in Yov says, Kochoshech Tamun Litzpunav, all darkness that is hidden away for those, Ta'achleyu Eish Lo Nupach, he'll be consumed by fire that is untamed, Yera Sarid Be'ohalo, and the remnant or the survivor will have evil or terrible things happen to them in their tent, Fein Sarid El Atamid Chacham, and the Sarid is a reference to Atamid Chacham, Shnemar, Ubisridim Asher Hashem Kroeh, those remnants or those survivors that Hashem calls out to. So that's a reference to the Talmidei Chachamim that survived. And the survivor is going to have bad in his tent. Why is he having bad in his tent? Because he's teaching Torah to someone who is inappropriate. Rashi reads the Mishi Ra Sarid Ba'olo as a definition of Talmid Ra, as an evil student. Not that the Talmid Chacham is evil, but rather the student or the Talmid who is evil in his tent, that is going to cause the problems of Tachleyu Eish Lo Nupach, which is that the Eish Shel Gehinom will consume him. Obviously, a very negative statement about this. And Amar Rabbi Zera Marav, Koloshonel Tamid Sheino Agun, Skizorek Evan the Markulis. Someone who teaches a Tamid that is inappropriate is like throwing a stone of towards Avodah Zarah, like worshipping Avodah Zarah. Shnemar, Kitzror Evan Bimargema, like a pebble or a stone in a sling, Kain notain l'ksil kavod. That is like the person who gives kavod to the fool. And then you can see here in the Girsa on the side, Vein kavod elo Torah, Shenemar kavod chachamim inchalu, utinim tumimim inchalu tov. So then they have the pasuk that shows that kavod is a reference to the Torah. And in that way, it's giving a fool Torah is the same as throwing a stone with a slingshot. I'd say here they're playing on the throwing of the stone, which was the worship of the Markulis. They're playing on that. And also the modern day, the word margema is used for a mortar, which is something else that throws quote unquote stones. It's something that shoots things out. So same thing over here. Something that shoots out stones, which is throwing the stone at the Markulis, is for someone who gives a full kavod. And the kavod is Torah. In the Ein Yaakov, he brings a continuation to the Gemara that we don't have over here, but it's not relevant to the topic over here, but it's a continuation of the idea of Zorek Eben and Makulus. And then it says, Uktiv, lo nave, lichsil, tanug. The enjoyment and the benefits are not appropriate or doesn't befit the fool. And obviously over here, they're thinking about the tanug is the limud Torah, or the rewards of Torah do not befit the fool. Again, if you take the gears of the Ein Yaakov, then they don't need this pasuk. They rather the pasuk comes from Ukvod Chachamim in Chalu, that the Torah is called Kavod, and then this pasuk of Lo Naveh L'Chsil Tanug would not be necessary to prove that. But the idea being that when you teach someone who is inappropriate, then you are in some senses degrading the Torah, and in some senses you're doing a disfavor to the individual. Both that you're teaching Torah to someone who needs to have a different view, a different approach, and a different conduct, because they in the end are going to represent the Torah that you are teaching. So when you send a Talmid out and the Talmid is acting inappropriately, it's going to reflect back on the teacher and on the Torah. So you have to be careful. If you're teaching someone who's not going to act appropriately, they're eventually become representatives of the Torah, and they're going to demean the Torah by acting inappropriately. That's one. Number two is, if they don't have the proper approach or perspective, they will misinterpret the Torah, they will misuse the Torah, and that will be problematic as well. And the other issue is that these individuals can be negatively influential on the other Talmidim that are there. And we have also the Gemara that tells us in Chagiga that the Torah should only be taught by those who are Kimalachei Asharet, where their behavior and where their conduct is beyond reproach. So those individuals are the ones who are appropriate to teach Torah. So if you're educating the next generation of teachers, then they have to be people who are also going to be like Malachei Asharet. So that there's a tight correlation between a person's conduct and their Torah. Meaning that it's not enough to have the intellectual Torah. Torah comes together with a set of behaviors, a conduct, and a representation of Hashem in a certain manner. And therefore there's has to be Torah im Derech Eretz. And Torah without Derech Eretz is not the appropriate Torah. And therefore a Talmid Sheinu Hagun is going to be a problem from all of these levels. And most fundamentally because of this idea that the Torah of the person is affected by their behavior. And the Torah of the person that they convey is impacted by their perspective and by their conduct. And it poisons their Torah when they don't act appropriately. And therefore you have these strong statements against teaching a Talmid Sheinu Hagun. HaMishta Tevi Mehem Tzarich Lirshom. Says in the Mishnah that if you partner with a Goy or a Kohen, you gotta mark the animal or the Basar so people know the reason you're not giving Matanot is because it's Patur. Otherwise people are just gonna think you're not giving Matanot. That's gonna cause either people to think you don't have to give them, or for people to be suspect of the fact that you're not giving it. In order to take away that Maratayin, to take away that problem of causing others to do the wrong thing, we mark the meat. Vafilo ima oved kochamim. From our Mishnah, it sounds like you have to mark it whether it's a Kohen who's your partner, or whether it's a non-Jew who is your partner. Viraminu, is that really true? We have the Tosefta, Mishtatevim a Kohen, Tzarech Lishon. If you're partner with a Kohen, you need to mark the meat. But Mishtatevim oved kochamim, upsulei muktashim, ain't Tzarech Lishon. If you're partnering with a Goy, or your animal is a psulei muktashim, then you don't need to mark it, seemingly because it's obvious that you are patur in this case. And the question is, what makes it so obvious that it's true by a goy and not true by a kohen? As Tosafot said yesterday's daf, Tzarich Lirshom is siman al basar, regilim hayu lirshom basar shepatur min hamatanot. I don't know if they have a plumba, they had a marking, whether they branded it. There was something that they did that made it clear to others that this was patur min hamatanot. So the question is, what's different between a goy that is your partner versus a kohen? It's a case where the Ovid Kochavim is sitting in the stall. Meaning that he's in the store there with you, so it makes it clear that he is your partner. Mar says, okay, that's a great solution, but the Tosefta contrasts the Goy with the Kohen. If that's the case, why when the Kohen is in the store do you have to mark it? The Kohen being in the store should be just as obvious as the Goy being in the store that he is a partner here. To Amre, Bistro Kozovin. Because when the Kohen's there, they're going to say he's there to buy meat. He's not a partner in the business. Where it says, Yochi Ovid Kochavim Nami Amre Bistro Kozovin. Maybe the Goy is coming to buy meat. Now, in today's world, that would be less likely, meaning that the cost differential is so high that you wouldn't expect a goy to be in there buying basar. Except when there's a meat scandal and they want to make sure that they're getting only the best meat, then they go into the kosher butcher store. But in their day, obviously, it seems to me that the pricing wasn't such a big difference, that a goy would come and buy meat from the Jewish butchers. Ela hachamaya skinan, yotivom kochavim akasefta, that he is standing by the till. He's running the money in the store. So clearly he's a partner there because the balabai trusts him behind the till. Dichvadagabi goyim diyotiv akasefta amay tzarech lishom. The same problem is you're contrasting that with the goyim. When the goyim's sitting behind the till, why isn't that automatically an indication that he's a partner in the business? So amre hamone hemne. Now he's just going to say he trusts him. He's a worker. He is his trusted worker that he puts as the cashier. So then the guy says, so the goy that said, they'll say also that he's his trusted worker. So he says, so I don't think this is a generic statement that there is no trustworthiness in Ovi Kochavim. It's just that it's less likely that that would be the scenario. Meaning that when you have somebody that you want to trust, you usually trust someone who's in your quote-unquote brotherhood. That's the idea of a brotherhood, that you trust your brother behind the till. You're not going to trust someone else who's an outsider behind the till. That's why family-run businesses, the family is running the cash register. Even if there are other workers in the store, the money is always taken care of by the family. So similar over here, a Jew behind the till makes sense that the Jew's there because he trusts him. He's part of the brotherhood. The goy that's there, it's less likely that he put him there because he trusts him, but more likely that he's a business partner, and that's why he's there. But if he's a business partner, obviously he trusts him. But it's a different type of trust. It's because he's a partner, not because he's a worker. And so therefore, the assumption of people would be, it's not necessarily whether one is more trustworthy than the other, it's just when you see this scenario, what is your first impression about that person being behind the till? Right, so, Ibaidema, Stamovi Kochavim, Mifa Pai, a Stamovi Kochavim trumpets its own horn. Which means one of two things. Either way, Rashi explains it over here is that when he's in the store, he speaks up. When they're coming to the store, he screams at the butcher, why aren't you giving him this? Why aren't you charging him more for this? He's involved in the business and he wants to give his advice and his 2 cents worth on it. So everybody knows that he's a partner in the business because he's speaking up when they're in the store. Whereas the Kohen is more tzanua, as Rashi says, and he relies on the balabayit. He leans on the balabayit because he's tzanua. And he assumes that the owner of the business knows what he's doing. That's why he's in a partnership with him, because he knows what he's doing. So rather than a man speaking up, he just is quiet there. That'd be the difference between them. Or the other way to explain it could be not in the store itself, the goy is loud and the coin is quiet, but rather outside. A goy goes around talking about his business, boasting about his business, and though everybody knows he's in business with a Jew. Now then the coin is quiet about his business, and he's more tzanua, and therefore nobody knows he's in business with this individual. So that's one answer. So either answer is, Ein emunah b'obed kochavim. Rashi reads it more simply, Ein yisro regulim la'amin b'hem, that they don't usually trust them. Again, I don't think it's a mark of the trustworthiness of the individual, but rather a mark of the brotherhood aspects of it. Or the other option is that the obed kochavim is much more vocal. And therefore it's obvious that he's a partner versus the kohen who's less vocal. If it's psuleim and dushim, you don't have to mark it. Alma mukhamilta. So from there, you would assume that it's obvious that this item is psuleim and dushim. Just like by the Ovi Kochavim, it's obvious he's a partner, that's why you don't have to mark it. But psuleim and dushim, it also must be obvious that they are psuleim and dushim. Va'anan tznan. Don't we have a Mishnah in Bichorot? Psuleim u'kdashim nikarim bi'idliz v'nishkatim bi'idliz v'nishkalim b'litra. Psuleim u'kdashim can be sold in the marketplace. They can be shefted in the marketplace. And they can be weighed on the regular meat scales that are there. So the contrast in the Mishnah is to the Bechor and the Meiser Be'ema. By the Bechor and the Meiser Be'ema, the beneficiary of selling them when they have a mum in it is the owner. That's true by the Meiser Be'ema. That's true by the Bechor. On the other hand, by Psuleim Muktashim, when you sell it, the beneficiary is Hekdesh. Because the proceeds from the Psuleim Muktashim, you have a Korban that gets a mum in it, those proceeds are going to be used to buy another Korban. And given that, the beneficiary is Hekdesh. So we're willing to be Mizalzel in the Kodesh, or the Psuleim Muktashim, in order to garner more takers or a higher price, because the beneficiary is hekdesh. In that situation, we allow you to sell it in the marketplace. We allow you to sell it like regular. On the other hand, b'chura maser, where the beneficiary is the owner itself, over there, we're not going to let you be mezuzah and kodeshim to reap a higher profit or return on the item, because the beneficiary is the individual and not hekdesh. So for that reason, a b'chura and a maser cannot be sold in the regular marketplace. They cannot be shefted in the marketplace. They cannot be put on the scales, as opposed to other mesulim kodeshim. But given that, how can you differentiate psulei mukdashim from any other animal that's being sold in the marketplace? Why is it obvious that it's psulei mukdashim? My answer is, Targuma Ravada Rava, Kamei de Rapapa, Vontanamim Karim, Mitoch HaBayit. It's only those that are sold in the house that don't need to be marked. The ones that are sold in the house are the Bechor and the Maser. They can't be sold in the Shuk. That's why it's obvious that they're psulei mukdashim, because he can't take them to Shuk to sell. He has to sell them out of his house. He has to do it in a more private manner rather than a commercial manner, and that's what makes it obvious that these are psulei mukdashim, and that's why people will know that they're patur b'matanot. B'nei nochanami, regular psulei mukdashim that are sold in the marketplace, they will need to have been marked, because otherwise it won't be obvious that they are p'turim. Amar Abuna, shutaf perosh patur min alechi. If the kohen is a partner in the head of the animal, then he is patur from giving that matana out of the three matanot of the Zroa, Lechayayim, and the Keba, he'll be patur from the Lechayayim, because Kohen has a partnership in the head. Now that partnership has to be one of two ways we'll see in the Gemara. Either he has a generic partnership in the head, which means that he's either the whole head, a portion of the head, but an undefined portion of the head. If he has a defined portion of the head, and it's not the Lechi, the Minchat Chinuch claims that he's still Chayav in the Lechi, because his partnership doesn't affect the Lechi, it's independent of the Lechi. Shutaf Yad, if he's a partner in the right foreleg, patur min hazroa, then again, you're patur from that of the matnot kuna. Shutaf b'bnei ma'ayin, he's a partner in the innards, the popek, patur min hakeba, then you don't have to give the keba. B'chir barav amar, afilu shutaf b'achat mehem, patur mikulat. So you have machloket amoraim, you have Rav Huna saying that when the kohen's a partner in a particular aver, if that aver is one of the matnot kuna, that matana you're patur from, the remaining you are chayavit. Here Barab says, if you already have a kohen as a partner, even if he's only a partner in one thing, it affects everything. Once you're patur from one item, you're patur from all of them. Now the easier way to deal with it is to make the kohen a partner in the entire animal. And then, if it's an undefined part, then technically he has a part in every one of the matanot, and it makes you patur. Here they have cases where he's a partner in a particular limb, and that's what's causing the problem. But in that, we have a machloket as to whether that's sufficient only to be poter that limb, or is that enough to be poter you from all the matanot? Machlok Rabuna and Chir Barav. So Meitave, yes, from the Tosefta. Harosh Shili Vitkula Shelcha. The head, the coin says, is going to belong to me, and the remainder belongs to you. Vafilu Echad Mimea Barosh. And if the coin only wants 1/100th of the head, patur is patur. Hayad Shili, I am going to take the yad, v'kula shelcha, and the remainder is yours, the Kohen says. V'afilu echad mimea b'yad, or even 1/100th of the yad, patur. Again, you're patur. B'nei ma'ayin sheli, the innards are mine, v'kula shelcha, and the remainder is yours. V'afilu echad mimea b'yad, even 1/100th of the b'nei ma'ayin, patur. My love, patur min alechi, v'chayav b'kulan. The patur by the rosh is his patur min alechi, but chayav in the remainder. By the yad, he's patur from the zroa, but chayav in the lechi and the keba. Patur min hakeba, but chayav kulan. And the way to read it is that the patur is referencing to that particular item, not to all of them. And the Gemara answers, lo, patur mi kulan. You can't say that. Patur could mean either one. It's inconclusive, the word patur, and you could read it either way. Vilitne, patur mi kulan. Well, if that's the case, just write it straight out. When you have patur, you could read it either way. But if you write patur mikulan, there's no safek as to what you mean. Bo tanya, harosh shili v'kula shelcha, afilu echad mimeya barosh, patur min alechi. Now we have it straight out. V'chaya v'kulan. Now we have a brayta that says it explicitly, that you're only patur from one item and not all of them. Tiyufta t'chir barav, tiyufta. That's a strong refutation of that position of chir barav, that if you have a partnership in one particular aver, then you're patur mikulan. That's not the case. Amar Rav Chisda, ha matnita atiyate t'chir barav. This brayta is what misled t'chir barav. He came to the wrong conclusion because he misinterpreted this brayta. Titania, the brayta, we discussed this just a little earlier. There are 24 matnot kuna that are mentioned in Parashat Korach. Kulan nidnu la'aron u'l-banav, b'chlal, u'b'prat, u'b'brit melach. All of them are given to Aaron u'banav in a generic sense, in a particular sense, and then with a covenant of the salt, which is v'yedaber Hashem el Aaron v'ani hinei natati lecha et mishmeret tumotai lechol kodshei b'nei Yisrael lecho nitatim v'moshcha u'levanecha lecha kolam. So the moshcha we learned yesterday means they have to eat a big gdula. But mentioned in the pasuk is Aaron u'banecha. And here it's a generic statement about all the matnot that are going to be given to the Kohanim. Then after that, it goes through each one of them. And then it lists them out bifrat. So the gifts of the Kohanim are given to them bichlau, in a generic statement at the beginning, and a generic statement at the end, as well as in particular, bifrat, where it tells you each one of the items that belongs to the Kohanim. In addition to that, it says, at the end of the series of the particulars, it says, Kol shemot ha-kodeshim asher yu mubnei Yisrael Hashem netati lecha ulevanecha ulevnatecha itecha lecha kolam brit melach olam hei lifnei Hashem lecha ulezaracha itach. So again, there is a generic statement about all these things going to the Kohanim. But then included in this is a brit melach, which is the covenant of the salt. Just like salt is always necessary for the spicing, the flavoring of food, or just like salt is always needed to preserve, or just like salt never disappears from the world, so too the matnot kuna will never be batel. That's the concept here. So the matnot kuna come with these three items, which is a klal, the generic statement that they belong to them, prat, the particular item, and then really another klal, which is the brit melach, which is this covenant that guarantees that the matnot kuna are not going away. Then, Kol Mekayman, anyone who keeps them and gives the 24 matanot, kilukiyim bichlalu prat brit melach. Then they're Mekayim, all three of these ideas, the klal, the prat, and the brit melach. Kol over aleihem, and anyone who violates them and doesn't give them, kilu over al klalu prat brit melach. Then you're in violation of multiple items, not just that one particular item. Veluhein, these are the 24 matanot kuna, breaks them down into categories. Eser b'migdash, 10 of them in the migdash. Arba b'Yerushalayim, 4 of them associated with Yerushalayim. V'eser b'Gvulim, and 10 of them outside of Yerushalayim. Eser b'Migdash, the 10 in the Migdash are the following. Chatat, the basar of the chatat goes to the Kohanim. Chatat ha'of goes entirely to the Kohanim. Hashem badai v'Hashem taloi, those are 2. They're kodshei kodoshim. Their basar goes to the Kohanim to be eaten in the Azara. V'zivchei shal mei tzibor, which are also kodshei kodoshim. V'lok shemen shal mitzora, the extra shemen from the mitzorah, the lok shemen that he brings for his tara, the leftovers, the shirayim, go to the Kohanim. Shtei alechem, the 2 alechem that are brought with the kivsei atzeret, the lechem apanim that's put on the shulchan weekly, the sheirei menachot, kodshei kodeshim again, the leftovers of the menachot after the komets is taken off of them. Minchat haomer, and the minchat haomer is also given to the Kohanim. So over here you have 10 items that are enumerated, that all are gifts that are given to the Kohanim inside the Mikdash, eaten in the Azara. Va'arba shebi Yerushalayim is ha-bechora, the bechor. Va'bikurim, the first fruits. Moreim min ha-todah u'mi el nazir, that which is taken off, the gifts that are taken off the todah and the el nazir. The chazeh ha-tnufah, the shoka yamin, are taken off the todah. And the zroah b'sheila is taken off the el nazir. So all those items that are separated away from kodshim kalim are given to the Kohanim to be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. Ba'orot kodoshim, and the orot of the skins, mostly the one is the olah, where the hides go to the Kohanim, so they also can be used by the Kohanim inside of Yerushalayim. The Rabbi doesn't point out, even though they were flayed inside the Mikdash, because the innards need to go on the Mizbeach, nevertheless, they're counted amongst those items in Yerushalayim, because they don't need to be kept in the Azara, they can be taken out of the Azara. So I think that's why I put it in the Yerushalayim and not into the count that Tosafot says, the 10 count of the Mikdash. Ve'eser b'gvulin, another 10 outside of the Mikdash that you get. Truma, Trumat Maser, Chala, Reshita Geis, Umatanot, which are Matanot over here. I said before that the word Matanot generically means Ro'a Lechayayim in Keba. Pidyon HaBen, the 5 shekel for Pidyon HaBen. Pidyon Petar Chamor, the set that is exchanged for a firstborn Chamor. Stei Achuzah, if he is Makdisha, Stei Achuzah, Shdei Yerusha, and then sold by the Gizbar to a third party, and the Yovel goes out to the Kohanim. Stei Charamim, if a person makes a Sadeh into Cherem, it goes to the Kohanim. It's Makolkas of Stam Charamim, Ad Hashem, or Stam Charamim, the Kohanim. But if you specify, obviously it goes to the Kohen. The Gezel Agir, that's the Keren and Chomesh. If someone took a Shvuah, denying monetary obligations towards the Ger passes away as no Yorshim, then when the person comes and admits that he lied under oath about it, he has to give up that Keren B'Chomesh to the Kohanim, aside from his Hashem Zelot that he has to bring. Hutsabar, Rav Chir Barav's conclusion from this Braita was, Midkochoshev lo the Matanot, Bechado, since Matanot are not counted as three separate items, Roa, the Chayayim and Kibad, they're counted just as Matanot, Chadaninu, then they are one item, they're one entity. So if you're Patur from one, you're Patur from all. Velohi, that's a misreading of the Braita. Ata Muram, Mitoda, Ve'el Nazir, the Kochoshev lo Kechada, Mishum the Chadaninu, those items that are taken off of the El Nazir, which are different than those that are taken off the Todah, because there's more taken off the El Nazir. Nevertheless, the Braita categorizes them as a single gift that's given to the Kohanim. Ela came to Dami on the Hododi, Chashib Lukachado. The reason it does that is because they are a similar genre of gift to the Kohen. So it subsumed them in one category, even though they're two different things. Hachanami came to Dami on the Hododi, Chashib Lukachado. So it's over here by the Matanot, Zroh the Chayayim and the Keba. Even though they're independent items, they still consolidate them into one gift because they all come in a similar manner. They're a similar genre of gift, and therefore it made them one, not because they're halachically one, but because topically and thematically they are one. Ibayalu, Harosh Shelcha Vikula Shali. The Kohen says to the Israel, you take the Rosh, and I'll take the remainder of the animal. So the Kohen is selling to the Tabach, the Rosh, and keeping the main body of the animal. So this is the opposite of the case that we had before. Mau, what's the din? Botor chiyuva azlinan, v'chiyuva gabe Yisrael. Do we go after the obligated limb, and the obligated limb now belongs to the Israel? That means that the lechi is going to now go to a Kohen because he doesn't have a shutaf Kohen in the animal. Odilma botor ikar behem azlinan. Or do we go after the primary part of the animal? Ikar behem the Kohenu. Kohen owns the entire animal except the head. So does the Kohen govern then with regards to the head because he owns the entirety of the animal ex the head? Or do we say that the Israel's ownership of the head is determinant? So Tashma, Ove Kochavim Kohen, Shemasru Tzonam LeYisrael L'Gzoz. A non-Jew and a Kohen that give their flocks to a Jewish shearer to shear them, Patur, if Israel is doing the shearing of a Kohen's animal or a non-Jew's animal, the shearings are Paturim Reshita Geis because they belong to people who are Paturim from Reshita Geis. The shearer doesn't determine. It's the one who owns it that determines. Okay, Geis Sono, Shalove Kochavim, Patur. Someone who purchases the shearings of an Ove Kochavim is Paturim Reshita Geis. Now, he didn't buy it afterwards sheared. He bought the animals when they're already ready to be sheared, and he actually purchased them. He doesn't have to give Reshita Geis. Vezeh Chomer Bezrav Lechaim Vekeba Yoter Meshita Geis. This is something that by Zroh Lechayim and Keba is a Chumrah versus Reshita Geis. So now by Reshita Geis, it says when you buy it off the guy, your ownership now doesn't change the status of the animal. Since it was owned by a guy before, it's Patur Reshita Geis. But the Tosefta, the Braita says, that's uniquely true by Reshita Geis. That's not true by Zroh Lechayim and Keba. So what you see is that by Reshita Geis, the previous ownership or primary ownership was dictating, not the current ownership in the Chiyuv. But that means in Zroh Lechayim the Kibat, it's just the opposite. It's not the primary ownership. It is the one who the Chiyuv is at slow. Shmamina, Botor Chiyuv Azlina, Shmamina. So there you can see clearly that when it comes to Zroh Lechayim and Kibat, we go after the Chiyuv. We go after who owns it at the moment that the Chiyuv devolves. And at the moment of Shkita, the Israel owned the head. Then your Chayav in Matanot doesn't go after the Ikar owner. Because that's distinct from Reshita Geis, where it does go after the Ikar owner. And in that case, the shearings belong to the goy, technically. And given that, the animals, the goy's animal, and the shearings, even though he bought them while they were still on the animal, they still are belonging to the goy. But that's unique by Reshita Geis, not true by Zroh Lechayim and Keba. And therefore, by Zroh Lechayim and Keba, if you own the Rosh, you're responsible to give them matanot from the Rosh, because the Kohen's ownership of the remainder of the animal doesn't dictate over here. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots at the bottom of Kuf Lamid Gimel Amud Bet.